The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, I'll reveal how big pharma companies like Pfizer and Moderna covertly worked with Twitter and other platforms to censor critics. More on that Hunter Biden monthly rent paid to Joe Biden. I'll give you the details. I'm going to ask whether we're right to be afraid of the World Economic Forum. An actor and producer, Kevin Sorbo, joins me. We're going to talk about his new film, Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
The latest episode of the Twitter Files is reported by Li Fang, who is from The Intercept. And Li Fang has a thread on Twitter, but he also has a longer article, which I have now in front of me, from The Intercept. And what is this describing? It's describing a concerted and somewhat covert effort by big pharma, by companies like Pfizer, like Moderna, to censor content on social media platforms that hurts their profits. I mean, this is almost shocking to say, because they're not censoring misinformation, as we'll learn in a minute. They're censoring legitimate debate, they're censoring information, and by the way, they are allowing misstatements and falsehoods by their own industry representatives to go unchecked, unexamined, uncensored. Those lies are, in fact, still up on social media right now. The story is a kind of a familiar one. So what we have here is you've got the pharmaceutical industry, and the pharmaceutical industry wants to work with these social media platforms, but they realize it might look kind of bad if they did this openly and blatantly. And so their lobbying group, they have a lobbying group and they operate through the lobbying group. The lobbying group is called BIO, B-I-O. And what does BIO do? BIO works with another operation that is a nonprofit called the Public Goods Project. So look at how this is all camouflaged. A lobbying group is giving money. In this case, it turns out $1,275,000 to this nonprofit. And the nonprofit communicates then with Meta, Facebook, with YouTube. It communicates with Twitter. So Twitter thinks, oh, we're dealing with this well-meaning nonprofit trying to censor misinformation. They don't realize what we're getting here is what the industry wants. Now, what does the industry want? First of all, it wants to shut down legitimate points of view that are disputing the vaccine. So they flagged a tweet, for example, from a senior Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT scientist named Stephanie Seneff. And she challenged the idea of vaccine passports. And she said that both vaccinated and unvaccinated people have, quote, roughly the same capacity to carry, shed, and transmit the virus. Now, by the way, this is an accurate statement. It's certainly a statement of legitimate debate. And by the way, it contrasts with false statements that were made by the CEO of Pfizer, who basically said that the vaccine was 100% effective in preventing COVID cases. We know now that that's not true, but it was suspected not to be true even at the time. I mean, from the very moment they started vaccinating people, there were people who were vaccinated who got COVID. So they knew right away that this is not a kind of preventive that's going to make sure you don't get COVID. Well, guess who gets suppressed? Or guess who the nonprofit here, which is the PGP, the Public Goods Project, taking money from Pfizer and Moderna, guess who they go after? They go after the MIT researcher who's telling the truth. And of course, they do not go after, no surprise, the Pfizer CEO, who is actually telling, well, if not lies, then certainly putting out misinformation, information that happens not to be true. There's another part of this that I found very striking and very revealing. In mid-September of 2020, a woman named Nina Morschenhauser, she's a lobbyist for Twitter in Europe, and she emails her colleagues basically saying that she's very troubled about a new trend. And the trend is that a lot of groups, a lot of public activist groups around the world are starting to demand that A, the vaccines be made available at a cheap cost worldwide so that people in poorer countries can afford them. They can also get protection against the epidemic. And they make the point that if the formula for the vaccines was made available, then other people could produce generic versions of the vaccine more cheaply. And basically, this lobbyist for Twitter is like, we can't let this happen. Well, all right, I understand the desire of companies to protect their patents and their copyrights, but what's interesting is that a campaign now begins to try to censor the activists who are calling for low-cost vaccines or who are calling for vaccines to be made available more broadly. And so what happens is that Twitter is now approached to, quote, hide the tweets of activists that target the accounts of Pfizer and Moderna. In other words, the activists are obviously saying, let's pressure Pfizer, let's pressure Moderna. And Pfizer and Moderna want to dissipate this campaign. They want to undercut it. And so they're working now with the social media platforms to shut down these activists. They're particularly concerned about a hashtag called hashtag People's vaccine. They don't want this idea of a people's vaccine, the idea that it's kind of a human right or the people have a right to get a vaccine. They want to shut this down right away. Why? Because they are making giant profits, huge profits on this vaccine. To give you an idea, Pfizer and BioNTech generate a staggering $37 billion in revenue from the mRNA vaccine in 2021 alone, making it one of the most lucrative drug products of all time. So we've seen censorship that is used to target political opponents. We've seen censorship that is deployed for all kinds of purposes. And here we have censorship deployed for a very simple purpose. You want to maximize your profits. And one of the ways you do that is shut down your critics. Sleep is just so important to our lives, and here's how you get to sleep like a baby in 2023. Mike Lindell is running a sale on his Giza Dream bed sheets. They're as low as $29.99. Mike promises the first night you sleep in them, you'll never want to sleep in anything else. The Giza Dream bed sheets are made with the world's best cotton called Giza. It's long staple cotton, which makes it ultra soft and breathable. The sateen weave gives the sheets a luxurious finish, available in multiple colors, styles, sizes, machine washable and durable. 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee, a great deal. So go ahead, call 800-876-0227, that number, 800-876-0227, or go to mypillow.com. Make sure to use the promo code, which is D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. In Alice in Wonderland, Lewis Carroll has a phrase applied to Alice where things get, quote, curiouser and curiouser. In other words, the plot thickens. And with the Hunter Biden rent story, the plot continues to thicken, introducing some new but also some sort of confusing elements. I think it's important to realize that Hunter Biden himself cannot be trusted. This guy is dishonest to the core. In fact, he's about as dishonest as his father. So you're basically dealing with a group of crooks and liars. Even their documents cannot be taken at face value because it would hardly be a surprise if they lie in the documents. Now, Miranda Devine of the New York Post uncovered the document where Hunter Biden claimed that he owned the house on Barley Hill Road in Wilmington, Delaware, that was one of the locations of the classified documents. So that's the tie-in from the classified documents. Hunter Biden claims he owns this house. Interesting. Well, Hunter Biden, in a separate disclosure, claims that he was renting this house that he owns, which obviously makes no sense. Either he owns it or he's renting it. But he separately claims he's renting it from Joe Biden. And he's paying rent of the exact amount is $49,910 per month. So think about that. That's almost $50,000 a month. That's almost $600,000 a year. Who pays rent like that? I mean, there probably are a few people in the country and in the world who do, but we're talking about that's the rent on something like a $10 or $15 million house, not on a house worth approximately $2 million where the rent should be somewhere around $7,000 or $8,000. Now, according to text messages found on Hunter Biden's laptop, Hunter was on the hook for 50% of family expenses. In fact, he complained about it. I'm now quoting Hunter Biden talking to his daughter, Naomi. He says, quote, "I hope you all can do what I did and pay for everything for this entire family for 30 years. He goes, "It's really hard, but don't worry. Unlike Pop, I won't make you give me half your salary." Implication? Joe Biden was making Hunter Biden give him half Hunter's salary. Now, I can sort of see Joe Biden's point of view. Joe Biden's point of view is, Hunter, you're a bum. You're a loser. Your ability to earn money is exactly zero. You're making money off of my name. We're selling family influence. And so I deserve a cut. So in that sense, in terms of a sort of a mafia claim, Joe Biden is right. He is the haymaker. He's the moneymaker. His name is what's selling. And so he's saying, look, I need to get half your salary because it's not really yours. Now, according to whistleblower Tony Babulinski, Joe Biden was the big guy and Joe Biden was getting 10%, 10% of the profits, 10% of ownership. Now, interestingly, we read in Breitbart that Hunter Biden's monthly rent of $49,910 is exactly matched by a disclosure, a rental deposit that Hunter Biden made to a real estate property called the House of Sweden. Now, the House of Sweden has nothing to do with Sweden. It's, in fact, a property in Washington, D.C., but there's a series of communications from the property manager of this property called House of Sweden and Hunter Biden. And the property manager writes to Hunter Biden and says basically that if you don't want to lease this property as you had contracted to do, she says that the deposit for $49,910 would be returned, but Hunter Biden has to sign a lease termination agreement. Now, what's interesting about this appears to be an unrelated transaction, but I think the reason it caught Breitbart's attention is for the simple reason that it's the exact same sum. So Hunter Biden says, I'm paying Joe Biden $49,910. And guess what? That exact number, $49,910, was also the security deposit that Hunter Biden and his partners apparently paid. Now, they were apparently anticipating a deal with CEFC China Energy. This is a notorious Chinese company. It has connections with the Chinese government. But this deal fell through. And so when the deal fell through, the idea was, well, we don't need this House of Sweden anymore. We were going to sort of use it as a place to carry out this project with the China Energy Company. And when the deal fell through, Hunter Biden presumably was like, let's get out of the deal. So what does this all mean? It's not really clear. It requires further investigation. As I say, I'm not convinced that Hunter Biden is telling the truth when he said that he paid Joe Biden all this money. In fact, if you look at Joe Biden's tax returns, as people have, Joe Biden doesn't disclose this income. In fact, he discloses some rental income. Apparently, the total he discloses is something like $18,000, so a long way from $49,000. And in another year, when, in fact, the year that Hunter Biden claimed to be paying all this rent to Joe Biden, he shows no rental income at all. So is Joe Biden, you know, prevaricating on his taxes? Is Hunter Biden lying? I mean, this is a highly dishonest family. It's kind of like when a bunch of people jointly commit some kind of crime. You don't know who did what, and everybody sort of blames the other. Was, no, this is the guy who pulled the trigger. No, this, the other guy was, both of them were there, but each one tries to shift the blame on the other. Something like this appears to be going on here. It's a family of crooks. And the House GOP, I mean, we have no confidence that the Biden DOJ is going to go after its own boss. But the House GOP, I think, can get to the bottom of this matter. Debbie and I started taking Relief Factor 2 years ago. The difference we've seen in our joints, nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are basically gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution, Relief Factor. Now, Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it because it works for them. They order more. Debbie's a true believer. She's been able to do all the exercises that for a long time she wasn't able to do. It's been a real game changer for her, her aunt, other members of our family, and for many other people. Now, you too can benefit. Just try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. The World Economic Forum is meeting right now in Davos, Switzerland. This is an annual conference of the world's movers and shakers. And there are a lot of people on the right who think that this is the apex, the nerve center of globalism, of really bad guys who are getting together to plot the elitist takeover of the planet. Now, I have a slightly different and perhaps less fearful view of this, in part because not only was I an attendee, but I was a speaker at the World Economic Forum. This is going back to the mid-1990s. I was invited to debate. It was basically 2-on-2, me and the former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres against an African Nobel laureate, a guy named Wole Soyinka, and also a leftist American political scientist, a fellow named Benjamin Barber. This was all based on a book I had written called What's So Great About America, or at least the themes of that book. The debate was over what's so great about Western civilization. It was a fascinating event, a big crowd. Queen of Sweden was in the audience. And in fact, at that time, I didn't even know there was a Queen of Sweden. I thought it was some sort of a joke. But no, she's the real Queen of Sweden, although only ceremonial, doesn't have the real power, kind of like the Queen of England. Now, one of the highlights that I remember most from that visit to the World Economic Forum was that they had small luncheons, and you could sign up for one. And I'm looking down the list, and I see Yasser Arafat. Remember Yasser Arafat, head of the PLO? In fact, perhaps one of the world's early leaders of terrorism. And I thought to myself, well, I'm never going to be able to meet Arafat. I mean, I don't attend the Arafat terrorism workshop. I'm not going to go to Decapitation 101, you know, in Ramallah. So here's a chance for me to see Arafat up close. And I don't remember a whole lot from the luncheon, but I just remember the weird feeling of being there at the luncheon, just a few feet from Yasser Arafat. Now, fast forward to the present, where at this World Economic Forum, you seem to have all the familiar characters. I haven't gone through the whole list, even though it's been made public, but it's the familiar faces. I saw Joe Manchin is there uttering some nonsense about how freedom of the press is actually a dangerous idea. Manchin occasionally, I think, just says things that make no sense. Kristen Sinema is there. That's hardly a surprise. Christopher Wray, the FBI director, is there. And John Kerry. In fact, John Kerry was telling the World Economic Forum, he goes, it's pretty extraordinary that we, a select group of human beings, there's the elitism, a select group of human beings are able to sit in a room and come together and actually talk about saving the planet. This is just hubristic nonsense. Frankly, it's also hypocritical. Think of the sight of all these tycoons, Kerry included, flying in on private jets to, quote, talk about saving the planet. It is repulsive. I can kind of see why people get so angry at these people. And also, apparently, they know that they're sort of hated. Why? Because the World Economic Forum apparently asked the Swiss government to provide 5,000 security guards and soldiers to protect them from, well, let's call it the unwashed mob or the unwashed masses. They're afraid that there are activists who might try to break their way in or perhaps even start interviewing the delegates to the World Economic Forum. So they're like, let's create a security cordon. So all of this, I agree, optically looks really bad. And there is an element of the World Economic Forum that's a little bit of a cult. I mean, these are people with an inflated sense of their own importance, starting with the guy who runs the whole affair, a guy named Klaus Schwab. Frankly, I'm amazed the guy is still alive. He seemed to me to be like 80 when I met him in the 1990s. If that's the case, he'd be over 100 years. I don't think he is. He just looks old. And he also says pompous things, as many people do at the World Economic Forum. This year, apparently, they're talking about gene editing. So to be able to edit people's genes and also animal genes to try to create a different kind of cat and perhaps even at some point down the road, a different kind of human being. They're into stakeholder capitalism. So in other words, not just shareholder, but stakeholder capitalism. A few years ago, they had put out the video and the slogan, "Own nothing, be happy." Now, even though there are some people who see all of this as really dangerous, I think it is dangerous because there are obviously powerful people there, but they're not dangerous because they're at the World Economic Forum. They're dangerous because one guy is a member of the European Union and has a lot of influence over there. Another guy is the despot, running some African country. And a third guy is the climate czar of the United States. So in other words, their power comes from their own positions, in some cases their own wealth, in some cases their own governments. The World Economic Forum is simply a kind of conference where all these characters, many of them, of course, having a stake in globalism for the obvious reason that you wouldn't go to a global conference unless you believe that there was some sort of attempt to bring together the leaders of the world and solve problems together. So it's a collectivist mindset. It's a globalist mindset. There are a lot of people there that I think do a lot of harm to humanity, but they do it not because they're at the World Economic Forum, but they do it because in their own respective countries, they have a lot of power. My dad didn't believe in the stock market. He was a put your money in the bank kind of guy. But I discovered in the early 1990s that investing in the market makes a lot of sense if you're in it for the long term. Problem is, we're in a very rocky economy with a lot of craziness at home, a lot of instability abroad. There's always the risk of a black swan event. This is an unanticipated event, comes out of nowhere, basically decimates your savings. So how do we take advantage of the upside of the market and protect ourselves against the downside? Well, we need some really good guidance here. And my friend Rebecca Walser, she's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. She and her team can help to protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. So go to friendofdinesh.com and book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. Again, that's friendofdinesh.com. The CEO of Victoria's Secret, a woman named Amy Hawke, has resigned less than a year into her job. And this is all part of a once revered and obviously titillating franchise, you know, going down, down, and down. Victoria's Secret has been sinking like a stone. In fact, shares dropped even further on the news that this woman is now leaving. All of this goes back to Victoria's Secret going in a new direction, starting in 2021. In fact, at that time, the company announced with great fanfare they were taking the brand in a new direction. Previously, they said they had focused on what they called the sexy brand, but they decided we're going to move away from that. And I'm thinking, think of this. This is a company burning its own brand. It had a very successful brand, and that is basically women who wanted to look attractive. And Victoria's Secret decided that's the wrong direction. So they went woke. And they decided, this is a former CEO, a guy named Martin Waters. I mean, this is the kind of guy, it's hard to believe he even went to business school, but he goes, "When the world was changing, we were slow to respond. We needed to stop being about what men want and to be about what women want." And this statement right there summarizes the destruction of this company. Why? Well, let's think about it. A lot of things in the world are done by men because of what women want. And a lot of things in the world are done by women because of what men want. In fact, I would argue that the behavior of men and women can be largely understood in terms of what the other sex wants. Many years ago, I heard a funny phrase. Someone said that the average girl prefers beauty to brains, because the average boy can see better than he can think. And if you think about that, what I think it's true, it's that girls focus their priorities on the interests of boys and vice versa. I mean, think even about the somewhat disturbing symbol of some short, rich, fat, old guy with some young, thin, beautiful girl, young woman. And think about what each of them are up to. Well, obviously, the older guy wants youth and beauty. That's why he chooses the younger girl. And the young woman wants, presumably, sophistication and comfort, security, money. That's why she chooses the older guy. If the younger woman wanted someone who was, like, really in shape, then she would have chosen someone else, probably someone closer to her own age. So obviously, men are being the way women want them to be, and women are being the way men want them to be. There's, by the way, even an evolutionary explanation for this. There's a whole subfield of evolution which looks at so-called unnecessary adaptations. A famous one, by the way, is the peacock's tail. Now, the peacock's tail is obviously expensive. By that I mean it makes you more of a, you put out a big tail, you're more vulnerable to predators. What possible purpose does the tail serve? And an evolutionary biologist from Israel came along, this is a few decades ago, and said, look, the purpose of the tail is not to survive. The purpose of the tail is to attract the opposite sex. So the tail is a sort of a display. It is a performance. It is an effort. And since there's obviously evolutionary value in attracting the opposite sex, that's what leads to reproduction. The peacock's tail, although not serving a direct survival function, serves an indirect evolutionary function. So the point being here, what does all of this have to do with Victoria's Secret? What it means is that Victoria's Secret actually had something going for it, which is the idea that women and wives like to be attractive, and Victoria's Secret had the right product and the right image, and they had the right models, and they had the right sort of vibe, and their fashion shows were a big deal. And then they decided, that's the wrong direction. We need to be woke. We need to go with what these sort of activists are telling us to do. And they did. And they destroyed their own company. And I am laughing about it. I'm very happy about it because it shows you it's a confirmation of the slogan, go woke, go broke. We all could use a fresh start. The phrase literally means an opportunity to begin something again. You know, you need a fresh start in your eating habits, right? How many times last year did you say to yourself, I need to start eating better? Well, eating the right amount of fruits and veggies every day is almost impossible. I have a much more convenient way for you to make that fresh start with Balance of Nature. Now, sourced from 31 whole fruits and vegetables, you get maximum nutrition with their star product, which is this, fruits and veggies in a capsule. Debbie and I take them every day. You should do so also. Now, right now, they're giving you a special New Year's offer. Get 25% off plus free fiber and spice with your first preferred order of fruits and veggies when you use discount code America. This offer can end at any time, so go ahead, call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com. Use discount code America. Guys, I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast my friend Kevin Sorbo. He is a, he's probably most known for the lead role in Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, which went on to become the world's most watched TV show. He's been in over 90 movies and TV shows. God's Not Dead, which I'm sure many, Soul Surfer, Reagan, Two and a Half Men, Hawaii Five-0. He is also the director and lead actor in the latest Left Behind movie, which is based on Jerry Jenkins' award-winning books. The movie is called Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist. And by the way, the website, leftbehindmovie.com, the movie opens January 26th in 1,500 theaters around the country. Debbie and I watched it and really enjoyed it. Kevin, a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. Let's talk about this latest movie, which depicts a scenario called the Rapture. It looks, anticipates, I guess, the aftermath of the Rapture, and it points to, I guess, what the Bible describes as a sort of a tribulation that is to come. All of this, I'm guessing, is coming in part from the book of Revelation, but perhaps also other parts of the Bible. Let me start by talking about the movie, and then we'll zoom into this concept of the Rapture.
Okay. Yeah, with, you know, they came to me about 7-8 years ago. When I say they, it's called Cloud 10. It's a company out of Toronto that owns all the book rights for the last 35 years. They started with Kirk Cameron. The latest movie was actually 8 years ago already with Nicolas Cage playing the role that I took over in this movie, Rayford Steele. Rayford Steele was the pilot in the book. And it's 6 months after the rapture now. And his wife was taken. His 10-year-old son were taken. They were all Christians. So it's about four stories and that all come together at the end of the movie. But his journey now is to sort of look for redemption. I mean, this is sort of an action thriller in a way as well. And it deals with what the world would look like after the rapture happened, after all the Christians get taken away. And you know that people still deny that it happened, even though people saw it before their very eyes. We'll have the non-believers still out there. But you're also getting a lot of people like my character. And I was trying to go, okay, my wife warned me about this. It did happen. It's real. I want to find out what's going on. And there's an interesting part in there when I go to the church that she always went to. And who would I find in the church but her pastor. He was left behind. And it's not giving really anything away because it's in the trailer for the movie where you gave it leftbehindmovie.com. People will see the trailer. So it's an interesting road and look at what possibly the world could look like after the rapture. And now it's the beginning of the 7-year tribulation, which the book of Revelation does talk about.
Let's talk about the rapture. I have in front of me the Bible doesn't use the phrase rapture. That's not in the Bible. However, the Bible is full of the theme that that there will be resurrection, not just for Jesus, but for all the believers. In other words, all resurrection is something that all of us as Christians can anticipate and look forward to. Now, this is Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians book 4, and we have this remarkable passage where it says, I'm going to read it here. "For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And thus we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words." I mean, this is a very remarkable image here because it implies that, look, there are people who have died who are believers. They're going to be taken up into heaven, but they're going to be people on earth who are committed believers who have evidently been anticipating the rapture, and they will somehow be drawn into the clouds. So that's the event. Is this the strongest biblical support for the notion that the rapture is in fact something that is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really hit it sort of right on the nail. And if you read the book of Revelation, I remember reading it for the first time as a 12-year-old. And as my pastor told me back then, he said, read the book of Revelation, that will scare the hell out of you. And as a kid, it scared the hell out of me because it's read like a sci-fi movie. I mean, it's crazy, the creatures, the angels, everything that's going to be happening during that time. And it's scary at the same time. But there's also a lot of hope in there as well for those who are believers. So this movie, like I said, picks up 6 months after that. And you see the world still in chaos. We made it very modern, by the way. They did a total rewrite on it because they wanted to bring it into today's world. So they talk about the pandemic without naming it. They talk about the rioting and the anger and the hatred out there, which we've been seeing like crazy the last 3 years. My wife, Sam, joked about, she goes, maybe the rapture happened already with what's going on Earth. And we got left behind ourselves for some reason. So but it's I hope this movie motivates people to really have a good conversation about the possibility of that happening. And I don't want this just to be a movie that the choir supports. I don't want to preach to the choir. I want the choir to do it. But I want people to sit there and, hey, take your friends to the movie as well, because it's tough to get non-believers to go to church. They go, no, there's church people there. I don't want to go to church. But if you take them to the movie, that's a whole different thing. So I hope people will support this. And right now, we're getting a strong, strong surge of people are buying tickets before the movie comes out.
Let's take a quick pause. When we come back, more with Kevin Sorbo about Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist. You get the podcast, guys, for free, but if you want to support my work, I have a way for you to do that, and that is to subscribe to my Locals channel. It's a really good deal. I've now got several first-rate films up on the Locals channel. Each one is handpicked by me and Debbie. These are powerful, moving films of the kind that Hollywood hardly ever makes anymore. Films like 2000 Mules, Long Road Home, which is the Johnny Cash family story, The Stoning of Soraya M., starring Jim Caviezel, The Disruptors, a terrific documentary on ADHD, and Sabina, a film with an unforgettable Christian message. Many more films going up this year, 2023. My films, as well as great films by others. You can watch all of them just by becoming an annual subscriber to my local channel. It's $50 a year, less than $5 a month. Plus, you get other exclusive content, including my weekly live Q&A. Sign up at dinesh.locals.com. I'd love to have you along for this great ride. Again, it's dinesh.locals.com. I'm back with actor and director Kevin Sorbo. We're talking about the new film called Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist. It's going to be in 1,500 theaters around the country January 26th. So mark your calendar. By the way, the website, leftbehindmovie.com. Kevin, you know, I was thinking about the book of Revelation. It's I thought to myself, how was that book written? And, you know, I was thinking to myself, probably what happened is that God showed John the events, almost perhaps like a movie or in a dream. John saw what happened. And then, of course, John wrote it down in human terms. And so when you have all these fantastic images and so on, I don't know if that's an exact description of what's going on or if that's a human description written obviously in ancient times, about an event far away into the future. But you're quite right that it's a mind-bending account of future events. Let's come back to the rapture for a second. The concept of left behind is that there's going to be a bunch of people who are left behind. Now, it doesn't follow, does it, that those left behind people are like condemned or doomed, they're going to hell, right? They're left behind for what reason?
Well, because they don't have the faith. It's really the agnostics and atheists of the world that are left behind. And, you know, as the Bible says, they really get a second chance here. But that trial, that 7-year tribulation period is not going to be an easy one for people. It's going to be a very, very violent time. They will rise. They talk about the Antichrist rising at that time, a very powerful, charismatic political leader that people will follow blindly, even though he basically will be the son of Satan. For lack of a better way to describe the person. I actually had a friend of mine who's an atheist years ago when I said, just read the book of Revelation. I love your thoughts. And he said, whoever wrote that, dude, that sounds like a serious acid trip. He said, he found it interesting, but it is so far out there and so amazing. I mean, I've never had a dream like that, you know, and it's just crazy to look at that. But I think that people, I hope this movie, what makes it people do, is read the book Revelation and maybe read more of the Bible afterwards. But I think this movie will cause a lot of great conversations, hopefully in churches. I hope churches will support this. But what's great about the pastor being left behind, I do a lot of speaking events, mostly for pro-life or Christian education. And I always say, pastors, you need to remember, you work for God. You don't work for government. Because as you know, as well as I do, especially during COVID, all of a sudden, all these churches proved to be a lot of woke pastors out there. A lot of pastors that jumped on the bandwagon with what the government was saying, on government using fear as their weapon. And that's the greatest weapon government is using against us forever, but it showed itself, it reared its ugly head big time during COVID. So I'm hoping that people will wake up a little bit and pastors will wake up a little bit and churches need to start working together because they don't even want to work together. They're worried about working their congregation that's going to move away. My pastor, Rob McCoy, says, I'm not afraid of working my congregation down to a manageable size. And I love that quote. And I use it all the time.
That's amazing. The it's sometimes hard, I guess, to make sense of Bible prophecy because these are events that haven't yet happened. But there are some things that are fairly clear. I mean, the Bible clearly predicted that the Jews would return to their ancestral homeland, and here they are. They're back.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
The Bible also clearly does talk about the rise of an Antichrist. A figure opposed to God who will assume not just spiritual power over men, but earthly power, political power and control. And the movie depicts that, I think, in a very clever and powerful way. It picks up on themes like world government, a world currency, because obviously this has got to occur on a global level, right? You can't just have an antichrist in Pakistan or an antichrist in Brazil. It's going to have to be an antichrist for the whole world.
Yeah, and that's what the movie does show. It shows a couple of very charismatic figures that have that sort of power. And we bring up, the governments are doing it now, you know that. Talking about a one world government, talking about one currency, talking about just more and more and more control over everybody's lives. And thank God people are starting to wake up a little bit and fight back to that. But it's definitely out there. And this movie is going to hit home for a lot of people because there's a lot of current events of what the world is going through right now.
I mean, right now, as we speak, the World Economic Forum is meeting in Davos. In fact, I talked about it on the podcast today.
And talk about all flying their private jets in there. You talk about that.
Oh, you mean about the fact that they're all flying on their private jets to discuss how to save the climate, save the planet. Unbelievable. Well, Kevin, listen, congratulations on this movie. It's a fascinating film, riveting to watch. And as you say, it makes you think about things that you don't ordinarily think about. And it makes you go back to the Bible, which is always a good thing. So, again, guys.
Can I put a quick plug in here real quick?
Yeah.
I got an amazing quote from Jerry Jenkins, who was, along with Tim LaHaye, were the writers of those 80 million selling books, of the Left Behind books. And Jerry saw the movie and said, this is by far and away the best Left Behind movie I've ever seen. And he said it's perfect for the time of what's happening in the world right now.
When we saw it, we were like, this is ripped right out of the current headlines and out of current events. So Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist, due in theaters January 26th. Leftbehindmovie.com is the website. Hey, Kevin Sorbo, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
I appreciate your time. Always a pleasure to see you, sir.
Even though the vast majority of great scientists of all time have been Christians, and by the way, that list includes Galileo, who was a devout Catholic, nevertheless, there is a secular theme that runs through textbooks and runs through the culture, that there is this kind of ongoing conflict between science and religion. And one of the kind of prime exhibits of this conflict is the Galileo case. So what I want to do starting today and over the next few days is kind of go into the Galileo case because it has been a vehicle of secular and I would say anti-religious propaganda. The facts about the Galileo case are now well known. They're undisputed among historians, and yet they are not out there, if you will, because what's out there is we see this in politics all the time, the narrative. So let's look at the narrative because it's echoed by a number of the prominent so-called new atheists. Here's Daniel Dennett, talks about Christianity and quote, its unfortunate legacy of persecution of its scientists. In fact, he says of its own scientists. So here is Dennett acknowledging that Christianity has generated a number of very prominent scientists, and he's referring specifically here to Galileo. Carl Sagan talks about Galileo, who was sort of in a dungeon, as he puts it, threatened with torture for his, quote, heretical view that the earth moved about the sun. And Sam Harris points out that there's a Christian tradition of, quote, torturing scholars to the point of madness for merely speculating about the nature of the stars. Now, this is, as I say, propaganda. It's propaganda that, by the way, started in the late 19th century. A couple of prominent books, John William Draper's book, History of the Conflict Between Science and Religion, and then Andrew Dixon White, who is, by the way, the founder of Cornell University, or the first president of Cornell, a two-volume study, History of the Warfare of Science with Theology in Christendom. Now, these books have been largely discredited. They're full of whoppers and errors and false statements. They're actually taught in courses on anti-religious prejudice. But nevertheless, again, the kind of popular message has remained. It hasn't been corrected, even though the underlying scholarship has been debunked. We're going to focus really here on the Galileo case, and get into it in a little bit of detail. Now, prior to the 16th century, most educated people in the West accepted the Ptolemaic theory, the theory associated with the Greek astronomer named Ptolemy. And Ptolemy had developed a system based upon the geocentric universe. So the geocentric universe puts the Earth at the center, and has the sun and the other planets going around the earth. The geocentric view is to be contrasted with the heliocentric view, which ultimately prevailed and is in fact the correct view, which has the sun, Helios, at the center, and the earth goes around the sun. So, as I say, the geocentric view was dominant, and you might think the geocentric view was some kind of a Christian concept, but as we can see just by associating it with Ptolemy, no, it was a pre-Christian concept. Ptolemy was not a Christian. He was a Greek astronomer. And Ptolemy developed a fairly elaborate system in which the apparent movements of the stars and the planets could be explained in terms of this idea that the Earth was at the center. Now, if you turn to the Bible for a moment, the Bible never says that the Earth or the sun is at the center of the universe. The Bible is just silent on this topic. Now, sure, if you read the Bible from beginning to end, you'll get some references to the sun rising and the sun setting, but that is nothing more than describing experience, right? When you hear the local weatherman coming on the Weather Channel, he goes, "Well, sunrise is going to be at 6:10 a.m. this morning." Now that guy knows, of course, that the sun is at the center and the earth goes around the sun. So why does he talk about sunrise? Well, he's describing experience from our perspective. It looks to us, it appears to us that the sun is rising. Now, interestingly, a Greek thinker, Aristarchus of Samos, had proposed the heliocentric view in ancient times. But this view was dismissed because there was, in fact, nothing to support it. In fact, it seemed kind of crazy. If you want to think about what is the reason that people believe that the Earth is at the center and not the sun, is that the Earth doesn't appear to move. I mean, we're standing on the Earth. We can all witness the sun rising and setting. By the way, if the Earth is moving at high speeds around the sun, which is the basic implication of the heliocentric view, the Earth is going around the sun, as it turns out, thousands of miles an hour. Well, then birds and clouds that are not attached to the ground should be left behind. In fact, if you throw a stone up in the air, it should land in a completely different place because the Earth, after all, has moved a whole bunch in the interim. If you jump up, you should land in a different place than the ground that you left because the Earth has moved in the meantime. So all of these reasons, experience, normal measurements, seem to go behind the idea that obviously it's got to be the Earth that is in the center and stationary and the sun going around the Earth and not the other way around.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
It's
3-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.